This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And for our regular listeners, you know that we present people's stories, compelling stories, and told by people who are generous enough to share their experiences to help make other people braver or stronger. And sometimes the experiences are really difficult and challenging, and sometimes they're not, but they're still worth sharing. And what I know is, from years of doing this, is that every experience in life holds in it the seeds of a love letter to someone. Now, love letters can go way beyond romance. They can be gratitude, and usually are. They can be just evoking memories. They can be finding somebody from your past and inviting that person back into your life. Just so the letter is about the wonderful qualities of the recipient. And that, I think, is what makes it a love letter. Your truth put to paper in a compassionate way. Today's guest is Gloria Horsley, who is the president of the Open to Hope Foundation. And Gloria, I'm just going to give this to you. And could you tell us what started you on this road?
Well, in 1983, I was a clinical nurse specialist at the University of Rochester Medical Center, had four kids, and I thought, wow, life is great. And I taught at the university, and I was also a liaison for the surgical service. Mm-hmm. And I worked on a burn unit and worked in and visited families who had had loss. The nurses would call on me. And then
so your whole professional life has been one of being aware of and experienced in personal difficulty.
Right. And a lot of grief and loss. Mm-hmm. I was trained very fully in the area of grief and loss. And as I said, worked on a burn unit, and that will come into play in a minute. And worked with families where there'd been a loss. And then I remember in 1983, I was called to the service to talked to a family whose son had been killed in a rollover when the other son was driving, and the son who was driving the car where his brother was killed was in the hospital. And I said to the family at that time, I don't know what you're going through, but I think I have some information that can help you. And then 2 days later, my own son was killed in an automobile accident. He was 17 years old. And he and his cousin, we had gone down to Washington, D.C. for Easter, and he and his cousin were driving, and the car hydroplaned, and he lost control, and he hit a wall, and the car blew up, and they burned to death. So not only was I professionally understood, but then it happened to me, and I understood, you know, burn and the whole bit, and it was very traumatic, and, you know, two boys gone. So that's what got me started on the road of my own recovery and understanding about what people really go through.
What does that mean, your own recovery, in this sense? How do you get past a tragedy and a loss like that?
It takes time, for one thing, and it also takes a lot of love from other people and from yourself. And a lot of help from God and, you know, whoever your God is and whatever. I mean, you just have to finally surrender.
To what?
To the process. Mm-hmm. And you, early on, the first year, it's just, you know, total shock. And then the second year is tough because the first year you grieve for your loved one, and the second year you grieve for yourself, and this is what life's going to be like. But what goes away is the pain.
Does it?
I mean, yeah, it absolutely goes away. There's not the suffering and the pain that you had early on.
That's so good to know.
Yeah. And after all this time, the memories are even better. That's one of the things that's interesting.
Oh, I wish this were a television moment so people can see your beautiful face and smile at this very second. I was going to ask, what takes over the pain? So you're saying beautiful memories.
Absolutely.
And what a joy that you had this person
In your life.
In your life and that you were privileged to.
And now we have the largest grief and loss recovery site in the world.
Well, tell us how you went from this to establishing Open to Hope. And by the way, just the name of it, Open to Hope.
Right.
So you don't have to be in any kind of a frame of mind where you're hopeful.
No, that's why we call it Open to Hope, because we want you to just entertain the idea that you may find hope again, because you've lost hope, you know, mm-hmm. when you've had this kind of trauma. But there is hope, and we, you know, tell people to stay open to it. And we also say to people, my daughter and I, she's my co-founder, and I work with her, Heidi. We always say to people, lean on our hope until you find your own.
And so I guess people who come to you are willing to do that.
Obviously, yeah, yes, they come and they listen and they read and they
see people. So you've already got people who are open to hope.
Right, yes. Right, who have opened themselves up to the idea of hope. And then it's not always when you've opened yourself, then you've got to sustain hope. And that's what else we give them, too.
How do you help people do that?
I think part of it is just hearing other people's stories. Mm. You know, some people are a little further out down the road, and some people you can reach back and help. And one of the things you know, the early on is that you may be grieving, and then you might meet somebody who had somebody die earlier than you, and they see you, and you're up and standing and walking and moving, and, you know, there's all sorts of little hope things that come through. And on our website, we have over 4,000 articles, and we have 350 people that write for us for free.
Oh.
Just to help out.
And people who have come to you and found...
Yeah, they found hope, mm-hmm. and so they want to write about their hope.
Okay, why don't you give us your website nice and slowly.
Okay, it's Open to Hope.
www.opentohope.com. Okay, www.opentohope.com.
Uh-huh.
So I see this book here, and as I told you when you first came in, I get chills when I think about what you endured and what you're helping other people to get through. And I see right here in your book, it says grief is an illness and other myths surrounding mm-hmm. loss. And talk about that.
That's by Dr. David Daniels, and he's a professor at Stanford, one of the love people that he is so fabulous. David's son, David, was at Stanford University and was somehow, he was on vacation in New York and got pushed under a subway. Mm. And so David died, and David is a psychiatrist. And in that article, he is talking about that it's not an illness to grieve. And one of the things he talks about is antidepressants in there, because his mother was put on antidepressants when her 90-year-old husband died.
The benefits of them or
no,
the mistake of
the
them?
The mistake of them.
Oh, well, so, because you're not allowing yourself to feel what you need to feel?
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. they're kind of useless, because you're going to go through the process. I mean,
if
whether
not
you like
later.
It or not, it's not going to... It's not going to stop you from grieving. Antidepressants are just not going to do that. Grief is tough. It's hard work. But, you know, I've got three tips that I can give people out there.
Please.
About how they can do some things that will help them with the grieving process. One of them is gratitude.
Oh, well, that's what we're about here.
Yeah. Yes. There's actually a study that shows that if you practice gratitude 8 minutes a day, it will actually change your brain chemistry.
Yes, and I heard some time ago that for people who write love letters, something like 20 minutes a day, it actually lowers your cholesterol.
Yeah.
And I'm not counting the 20 minutes you don't spend eating animal fat.
Right, right.
So there is some brain, talk more about.
So the gratitude, and I always say to people, you know, are you grateful that you can get out of bed in the morning or match your socks? You know, or find a shoe or get out of the shower in less than 45 minutes.
Are there people who say, no, I don't care anymore?
I think, there's something about taking care of yourself early on after a loss that there's a shame connected with it, because you feel like people are going to think that I don't really care if I don't suffer. If I go for a walk, or if I express gratitude, or if I do anything, then maybe people won't think I really care.
Okay, that is such a good point. One of our often Love Letters Live presenters, I don't know if you know Alan Klein.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay, so learning to laugh when you feel like...
That wasn't what I was going to tell you. My second tip
Laugh. Yes.
My husband and I went to Tootsie after Scott died. And I don't know if you remember, it was Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, I've seen it. I can sing the whole movie.
Yeah. Yes. It was such a good plot. He dressed up like a woman to be in a soapbox sitcom. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know what we did? We went 10 miles to another movie theater away from our community because we didn't want people to see us
having a good time,
or laughing. We heard it was going to be funny. It was about 5 months after Scott had died. So that's what we do to ourselves.
Well, that's so important because what Alan says, and I think you're saying the same thing, and it's so good to keep in mind that if you allow yourself to laugh, to see any humor in the world, it does not disrespect the pain.
Absolutely.
Or the memory of a person who has been
But
killed.
We have to convince ourselves of that. It is so strange
yes.
What we do. And the other thing...
How can you laugh at a time like this?
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Uh-huh. Well, you're saying that to yourself.
Yes,
you're judging.
Of course.
You're thinking everybody's judging you. And, and sometimes they do.
Yes.
But you know what? You got to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that will help you... So the laughter, again, is something that makes those feel-good hormones come in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're talking about body changes
because mm-hmm.
sometimes we forget that grief changes our body, not just our, it's through our mind, but it produces different hormones. Immediately, when you have a loss, you produce adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And if people think back, if you have a sudden loss, you'll lose weight very quickly the first day because the adrenaline rush comes in and you lose water.
Hmm.
So they're actually hormonal things. And the laughter makes you have more oxytocin, more
mm-hmm.
feel-good hormone. And so does another thing, which is hugs.
Oh, physical, yes.
Getting hugs,
mm-hmm.
if you hug your dog or your friends or, whatever, but try
why
to get some
that?
Contact. It produces those feel-good hormones.
The same thing.
Yeah, the same thing. It's amazing. The human touch. We used to say in the nursing field way back, high tech, high touch.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we've got high tech now. And, so we got to work on that touch.
Yes.
Somebody told us that we have a radio show, and somebody that was on our show said that she gets, her husband died, and she asks for 10 hugs a day.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually lets her people that work with her, because now we're so adverse to hugging, we might get sued or whatever. But she picks people that she works with and tells them she wants 10 hugs a day, and it's gotten to be kind of fun for her because everybody will ask her, have you had your hugs today?
Yes.
So those three things can change the grieving process. It can change your feeling.
It's so good to hear all this out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Really good to hear it. So this grief is not an illness.
No.
Is we shouldn't be treating it like one.
Right,
yes,
exactly.
From a psychiatric point of view.
Yeah.
What are some other things? What is this moving to the middle of the bed?
Oh, yeah. And who wrote that? Let me say her name because I can't. By Sandra Persman. Moving to
is
the middle of the
after
bed.
After losing a spouse?
Yeah, uh-huh. Losing a spouse. And Sandra talks about that it's hard because your loved one was on
mm-hmm.
one side of the bed
mm-hmm.
and you're on the other. So some of the things she talks about is moving yourself to the center of the bed, your bed, and also moving your stuff around your room. And she even redecorated the entrance that comes into her house. So she does things with changing your environment.
Uh-huh, to make it yours instead
yeah,
of yours and some
exactly,
other spouse's.
Exactly. So doing the kind of small things. Doesn't have to be huge. You don't have to move out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually change your environment a little bit and move things around when you're ready. When
mm-hmm.
you're ready. One of the big things for everybody is when do I get rid of their clothes and personal possessions
mm-hmm.
and all that kind of thing. So
right.
Everybody has to be ready, and there are no right answers. My brother-in-law died this year, and my sister-in-law is 81 years old, and she
mm-hmm.
moved across the street from her kids, and she wrote an article for us that is going to be in our new spouse loss book that talks about the fact that everybody told me I wasn't supposed to do anything for a year, and I have,
mm-hmm.
and it was hard, and
mm-hmm.
I'm glad I did.
Yes.
So don't tell me that there are these rules about having somebody die, because they're not. You have to do your own rules.
I'm wondering, though, if the wisdom or some wisdom behind not doing something too soon is that you, when you are at your lowest point in grief, you can make a wrong decision that could hurt you later?
That's true. I think that's true. You really do have to look at, what you're doing and why you're doing it, and maybe not make any decisions for a while.
You're just saying you're not stuck to a formal
but
timeline.
On the other hand, there's some people who do. Some people clean out the room immediately, get the clothes together
mm-hmm.
immediately, and some people like to hang on. Some people like to have treasure boxes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just everybody. But one thing I like about our site and our books is that you can read about what other people have done.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So knowing what's permissible
yeah.
in life is really helpful, isn't it?
Yeah.
In all areas.
Yeah, just hearing what other people, you know, what kind of tips they've got and what they think. And then
or
you
what,
can
keeps
make
you, what keeps you a respectable human being.
Right, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And keeps you, you know, feeling good and feeling like you're moving in a positive direction.
You talk to people, you help people who have lost children.
And
which is the most frightening thing that most anyone could imagine.
Yeah, I think it is. I think when it happened to me, I felt like that was the worst thing that ever happened in my life. And when you talk about fright, one of the things that you will find with bereaved people, and particularly bereaved parents, is they lose fear, which is kind of neat.
Oh, talk about that. Like nothing worse could happen? I've got nothing to lose?
I'm not afraid anymore. I'll go do a radio program. I'll start a foundation. You know, I'll do whatever. Yeah. I mean, I'll try it. I mean, what have I got to lose?
I'm always so touched by the generosity of people who take difficulty and turn it into a way of helping others. Can you just, I don't mean to ask you to do anything that would make you feel immodest, but can you talk about yourself a little bit and what motivated you? And
well,
that's such a huge generosity.
Yeah, it's so exciting. I can't tell you. The people that I see as generous are not me. I see the people who write for us, the people who listen to us, the people who come, the people who share their hope, the people who open themselves to come to Open to Hope. I started this because I was volunteering with the Compassionate Friends, which is the largest grief and loss recovery group
in
the world.
Oh, so you had your one foot in that whole...
Yeah, I had my foot in that world of helping them out. I ran their professional day. Then they put me on their national board. I was a psychologist before then, so and way back before Scott died, a clinical nurse specialist and psychologist. Mm-hmm. So I was already in this world. And then after Scott was killed, I really didn't do a whole lot. In fact, I was on the Today Show and Sally and Montel for an in-law book I wrote, How to Deal with Your In-Laws. I didn't do
just
anything.
Just a whole separate topic.
Yeah, a whole separate thing. And then I retired and started with Compassionate Friends. And I just found that there was so many people looking for hope and connecting. And it just kind of built. And we started a blog to put
What about parents whose children have disappeared?
You know, people ask me about that, and we are going to get a little bit more involved in that because people have approached, you know, we've kind of built by people approaching us. We started out with kids, and then somebody approached us with spouse loss. And interesting you should say that because somebody approached me at a conference I was at, a Forum for Death Education conference, and asked me if we were doing anything with that and asked me if I would get in touch with them. So I do plan on doing that. It's an area that we really haven't.
Because you see more of that. I mean, you turn on the news and there's always just another beautiful child missing. And of course, even the phrase went missing, I don't like.
Right.
I have a little personal issue with that, as if it were a choice.
Right. The problem is that there's always hope.
Right.
And if you know, that the child won't have died. So they're not really excited.
And sometimes that happens.
Yeah. And so they're not really excited about, you know, our side, because we're after death. So, you know, as long as they're feeling, but when they find them, we're there.
So you're talking about what you deal with more as a permanent loss.
Yeah, our mission is helping people find hope after loss.
Yes, okay.
And we're very serious about that mission because
We
could get involved with hospice and Alzheimer's, and a lot of people want to move in that direction. So we try to keep because I started this foundation to give a voice to grief.
Yes.
Because there is very few places. It's interesting that I'm very pleased that you would interview us. It's very hard to get on television or radio or anything with this message that there's hope after loss.
I think that would be so important to everybody.
I know it is, but they don't want to have it on. It's a downer topic. They don't like downer topics.
Yes, it is. Well, okay, it's a downer topic. Nice point you bring up. Loss, I mean, losing a child or losing a spouse or any death. Death
can be.
Death. My mother just died 7 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And truth is, she was 96 and she lived a beautiful, privileged life. And it was sad. It was not a tragedy.
Right.
And it's important to keep that clear, you know.
Right.
But death can be a terrible plan for the living.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it is a downer, the death itself. But what you're doing is such an upper.
Oh, yeah. It's
fixing it. It's not a downer.
I can't tell you. It is. We have more fun My daughter, Heidi, is a psychologist, and we present together and do things together. It's a lot of fun. And my youngest daughter manages our website, and she's a techie person. And we just have a lot of laughs and a lot of fun. And it is so thrilling to see people go from the beginning of despair to joy. Yeah, it is absolutely thrilling to see people come back and smile again and find it. And the other thing I like, because we present together, and is that people can see this is a family thing. It's not just individuals. It's families that make it.
Yes.
You know, my daughter always says, grief will change us. It won't destroy us.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but we also have the privilege of seeing people move to hope, which is, as I said, a very exciting process. And it's, you know,
thank you for talking about this. I don't know why you're not on every television station around. This is a critically important
message. We try to tell people that.
Even by the way, for people who have not lost a child,
right?
You should go through life knowing that there's hope no matter what you face.
Absolutely.
Seems to me. I mean, even beyond actual immediate loss.
Yeah. And we talk about dreams, signs, and connections, and we talk about all sorts of wonderful things and how people do get through. And,
yes.
You know, it's a beautiful thing, you know.
Yes. And there are funny moments and memories.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely there are.
And in a way, as long as you are carrying a person in your heart, that person's not gone.
No, absolutely. In fact, we tell one funny story. Want me to tell you a short funny story?
Sure.
When Heidi and I present, we always talk about something that's funny about Scott. And I said one of the things I have to laugh about was Heidi was getting ready to go to college, and we had one little black and white TV set in that day. It was in 83. And it was carried around the house, and we had one bigger TV, and the kids would take the TV around. So Heidi got ready to go to college, and her brother Scott, the one who died, was off at school. He was a junior in high school. And so my parents came to take her to college, and she went in to get the TV set because she thought she'd put it in her dorm room, and went into Scott's desk, and the TV set was padlocked to his desk.
Good for him. Good for him.
So her brother anticipated.
Yes. So now you're saying her brother. I have a question that may seem kind of silly, but I react to it. When I hear people saying, "What was your mother's name? What was your son's name?" It's past tense.
Right.
He's always your son, and his name is always Scott.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think sometimes part of our language, we find ourselves in that sphere of not being able to live in the memory fully enough.
Right.
Because we relegate it to it used to be.
Right, right. No, he's certainly a presence in everything we do and in the foundation.
I can feel it. I've just never met you before. Just hearing about him.
Oh, yeah. He was a great kid. He is. He's, you know, he's fantastic. And we always say more people know him now than would have ever known him in his life.
Oh, yes. Sure.
So it's kind of, he really has had a huge influence on the world.
That's wonderful. It's so wonderful and so touching what you're doing. I'm just on the verge of tears and laughing, so just give me a minute. And let me ask you, which is really what I focus on, is if you were to write a love letter right now, to whom would you write it? I mean, I'm listening to you, and I've already got four love letters I want to write to people in your life. So, and love letters, by the way, is not a one-shot deal. It's not. You don't have to pick one person.
Right.
So who would you write to? Let's see. You're writing one now.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a couple. Of course, I'd want to write to Scotty and tell him I love him and miss him and thank him for everything he's doing for the world.
Yes. Oh, yes. And what about bringing him up to date on all of you?
Oh, yeah.
I think there's something really nice about letters written to people who are no longer with us physically on this earth. And letting them know,
well,
what's gone on since they've left.
Oh my goodness, you would be so proud of your sisters.
Oh, good. Oh, the way you said that with such feeling. So that should go right there.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And how Heidi has stepped up and made her life work to talk about sibling loss.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah, she talks about how she was supposed to spend more of the time in your lifetime with your siblings than you do with anybody else.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So she misses you, but she loves to talk about you and say good things.
Yes. And probably you do this a lot, but what do you remember about him physically? I think that's so nice to put specifics in.
Oh, he was beautiful. He was the quarterback on the football team.
Mm-hmm.
He was the catcher on the baseball team. He had a big head of blonde, wavy hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a love. Everybody loved him. He was a friend to everyone.
Now, who would you mail this letter to?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I want to say one more thing about your little sister loves you, and she's managing the website.
Oh, good.
Because they were very close. And he, mm-hmm. you know, he used to do stuff like go to his friend's house to sleep over and take her with him.
Mm.
You know, she was.
What was the age difference?
He was 3 years. Mm. She was 14 when he died, and he was 17. Mm. I guess I'd want to say she's okay.
Oh, good. Okay.
That's I'd want to tell him that she's okay.
So who will you mail this to? Because I think love letter. This is beautiful. It's got specifics about him. You're not talking about yourself. You're talking about him, which makes it a real love letter. But who we mail it to can be really significant and have lasting effects.
I left one person out, and it's my husband, who I've been married to for 52 years. That's fine. He loves you, and he's supporting our foundation.
I've got a question that's, of course, so bizarre right now. You say you've been married for 52 years. You look like you're 38.
No.
Well, clearly not, but yeah, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So those of you who can find her on television, do it.
Right.
It's really shocking, but go ahead. So you'll mail this to whom?
Oh, my goodness.
Let's think about that.
Who would I mail it to?
This is huge, who you mail it to.
This is weird, but I want to mail it to the world.
Okay.
For one thing, because everybody says things to parents who've lost children like you never get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this will always be a
bleak life.
Oh,
so the goal isn't getting over it. The goal is living with it, right?
Right. To live again. Yes. Relive. He lived.
Yeah. That whole business of getting over it and closure and...
Yeah. Somebody said closures are for bank accounts, not
love
accounts.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he lived, and who would I want to go to?
So what about... You don't have grandchildren yet.
Oh, yeah. I have 10 grandchildren. I could go to all of them.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. I'm just a squealing mess. Okay. So you have grandchildren. What about... Dear Scott, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to all your nieces and nephews.
Oh, yeah.
So that they will know how I feel about you.
Uh-huh. I love it.
And that letter, I mean, you could send a copy to each even.
Right.
It's hard to do. You can't do it in handwriting to that many people because you don't have time and you get writer's cramp. But you should do the first one in your own handwriting.
Right. I love it.
Because when your grandchildren's children find this, in some attic someday, they're going to know something enormously important about you. And more than that, I think, they're going to know what their pedigree is, these great-grandchildren of yours. They're going to know what kind of strength and love they come from.
Well, you're going to make me cry now.
Don't you think?
I do. I love it. I think it's wonderful.
You know, sometimes you wonder where your own strength comes from, or you need strength, and you look back and you say, my great-great-grandmother.
Right. Yep. I love it.
Who looked like she was 38 when she had 10 of us. I'll get over this. Had the strength to take this tragedy and make whatever it is they see.
Right. Exactly. I love it. Because I get strength from my great-grandmother that came from Wales.
Do you?
In a bottom of a steerage.
How do you know
find
about
her story? From my family. The story's passed down, and my aunt writes about the genealogy. And yeah, I love it. I love it as a love letter, though.
Because love letters is a permanent
lovely idea.
Legacy.
Yeah, it is, indeed.
Okay. Oh,
indeed.
Thank you so much for doing this. I'm thinking if there's more to say on another note, that you'll come back and do another one of these with me.
I would love
Maybe you'd like to pick four people and talk about their stories.
Uh-huh. I'd love to.
And just to keep people aware of this, open to hope. There is nothing more life-saving or important than hope.
Right, and sustaining it.
Yes, it's hopelessness that is the killer. I know this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there is hope. I mean, it's a fabulous world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it so much. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now. And please remember that if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion and a permanent legacy you can leave to someone. Bye for now. Thank you.